As I mentioned yesterday, one of our closest neighbors here in Barrie is the Sakya Retreat Center, just around the corner. Our land actually touches in one place, and for years I've been thinking about building an arch right at that spot. So I am really delighted and honored to be able to introduce the resident teacher from that center, Lama Mi'kmaq, who speaks astonishingly good English and even a little bit of French, I see. He's only been in the United States for just a few months. He came with His Holiness Sakya Trizin, the head of that lineage, from India in September. And at the moment, he's dividing his time between the center here in Barrie and their center in Cambridge. Lama Mi'kmaq comes from Dehradun in India, which is the site of the head monastery of the Sakya lineage. In Dehradun, there are two institutes of that lineage, and Lama Mi'kmaq was responsible for looking after these, which included about 150 monks. He told me just tonight that he did most of his basic study of the suttas and basic Buddhist tradition at the Tibetan Institute in Varanasi, that's Benares. It's affiliated with Benares Sanskrit University. And that he received the Vajrayana teachings from both His Holiness Sakya Trizin, who has visited this center, and Choge Trichen Rinpoche, who has also visited this center. So it feels like we are greatly honored to be able to welcome him here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is this okay? Wow.
I'm sorry that I'm not that very good in English language, as Sharon now said. But I will try my best to, in whatever limited English language knowledge, I will try to bring some of the basic Buddhist message, which is common to, I think, all of us. As if we go back to the Buddhist history, then when Great Lord Shakyamuni Buddha, when first he came to this world, then after getting enlightenment, then he shown a path which is based on the fact and truth. And I think that he did not wanted his teachings to be known as Buddhism, or after his name as a after his name. But anyhow, his followers have known that teaching as Buddhism in English. And then, yeah, according to the different countries and language, then there are different names. And in the similar way, then after India, then Buddhists went to different countries, like in Tibet, then Burma, Thailand, China, and Japan, and many countries. And in all these countries, in all this, although the basic principle of Buddhism is, I think, same, but it is just by the due to the country and also due to the language, then there are many different traditions. But no matter in what tradition or in what language, for us, I think the most important thing which we have to know is the message this this language or the this lineage brings to us. So one of the basic message, I think, common to all of us and common to all the tradition is that we always say that we human beings have more freedom. So whenever there is more freedom, then there is more happiness. It is kind of, I mean, practical and simple and easy way to know. That's why, I mean, basically in human nature, we have a craving for happiness. And due to that, I mean, there is always demand for more freedom. So when we say in human beings have more freedom, that does not mean that we have a complete happiness and complete freedom. As a Buddhist, disregarding all, I think, dogmatic things, if we just make all this study and experience more personal, on personal level, then I think when we say about more freedom to the human beings, then we are saying that compared to other beings, then we human beings have more freedom. We do not say that we have a complete freedom. If we have a complete freedom and a complete happiness, like Buddhahood, then there's no point in, I mean, doing practice or finding some spiritual way to get that. We already have that. But here, when we say about we have more freedom, then according to the Buddhist point of view, as great Indian Acharya Vasubandhu, in his Abhidhamma Kosha, he said that if we want to classify whole things, matters, then that can be just by one word we can know as a place. And then in that place, all those living beings are known as sentient beings. And what is samsara? Samsara is just these two, sentient beings and place. And then to know about the details about the place, then you have to work hard and you have to go deep to the Buddhist cosmology. So today we are not going to cover that point. And we will deal with the sentient beings. So when it comes to sentient beings, according to the Buddhist studies, or also I think in a way, in simple way, I mean, sentient beings are limitless, so there is no way that we will count each and every one and we will find kind of, we will make a census and get a number. There's no point. So according to the Buddhist teachings, whole sentient beings were classified in six different realms. So of these six different realms, then human being has, compared to the other realms, has more freedom. So now we have to compare and we have to see, you know. Usually when we just lead a normal life, then we just take everything as a granted and we do not realize how much freedom we are enjoying. So today we will do some comparisons. First, if we compare our human life with the animals, which is, I mean, very close and we can see them and we can know quite easily. So like in animals' realm, as you can see that generally the main cause to be born in animal realm is ignorance. Although they have other defilements, the main cause is the ignorance. Due to that cause, then what happens is they are so dependent. They are leading kind of a goofy life. Can I call that? they just eat to survive, and beyond that they do not see anything, and then they do not know what is good, what is right, or what is wrong. So that's why in animal realms they are so ignorant that the human beings exploit them. As we know, you know, we use them to kill them for our food. That's big torture. Yeah, all the meat eaters should. Yeah, we have to, realize that. Then besides that, we are, animals are used in the labs for the experiments. Then for the skins and, for the dairy products, in all that way, you know. Just, how much we human beings are using them and charging them and making them dependent. And besides, then majority of the animals are living in the sea and ocean, where then they just eat one another. And it is kind of a miserable life where there's no chance, you know, to practice Dharma, or they don't have freedom. Yeah, it is. The best the animals can become, maybe luckily in America they can become some pet, you know. Then they can lead some kind of better life. But even then, you know, they don't have great freedom or chance or opportunity to practice Dharma. So they are just leading a life just to survive. And compared to them, to their suffering, we human beings have much more better. We are more independent. Although we have defilements, compared to them, we are in much more better situation. So that's the animal realm. Then we now have to compare to hungry ghost. Basically, in hungry ghost realm, the main cause to be born in hungry ghost realm is attachment or the desire. Due to that, then they have a very strong greedy. Greedy in the sense that they always try to make the selfish territory bigger. Due to that greedy, then they have a very strong hunger. And also in paintings, if you have seen the paintings of the hungry ghost, traditionally we paint hungry ghost with a big stomach. That big stomach represents that kind of hunger, greedy. And due to that greedy, they always wanted to possess everything for themselves. And they wanted to use much more than their own share. But in the same time, due to the stinginess, as in the paintings you have seen, they have a very thin neck. So due to the stinginess, what happens is that they could not use anything, you know. So in that kind of situation, what happens is that, always they have a strong hunger, and in the same time, they cannot use that. So in that kind of situation, what they become is they become kind of oneness with the stinginess and greediness. And then they just suffer. They go after everything and they couldn't use. So compared to that, we human beings are much more, we have more freedom and we are much more in better situation. They have a very strong suffering that there is no chance to practice any Dharma. Then if we, we will just go in short way. Then if we compare with the hell realms, the main cause to be born in hell realm is the hatred of the anger. And due to that, although they have other defilements, then whole situation, the atmosphere, environment, and everything turns against that person. And that's why if we go detail like in cold hells and hot hells, these are the situations where whole environment is against that sentient being and always attacks. And this, in a way, what now, a few days back, Bush and Gorbachev, they are having meetings. You know, I've seen in the newspaper saying about hot war and cold war. So I think these are kind of a war process which is leading to that kind of hell situation. Wherever there is cold hell, their whole environment is against you. They will always attack you. So in the similar way, even in the, practically in human life, we can see that if one is very angry, then even the animals, you beat to the animals, they are not friendly to us. More one will be angry, then always lesser you will find friends. In that way, if you are angry and you become enemy to everybody, then not only those enemies, even you will dare not to go to their places because there is the mistrust, there is the doubts, and every situation is against you that will attack you. So I cannot say, these processes are hell realm, our hungry ghosts, but these are the, since we, if we can make these causes stronger, then these are the processes which can create the hell realm and hungry ghost realm. So these things, in some way, I heard that, people are not so kind of convinced or interesting to know about hell and these things. But as a Buddhist, I think we have to believe. And basically, even those who are not believing, they don't have any strong reason or support, except that, I don't believe in hell because I've not seen, or I don't know. That's all. Just by not seeing or not by knowing, we cannot reject anything. From the cause point of view, we have this kind of cause. If these causes, these defilements, turns into a very kind of magnitude, kind of proportion, there is chance that whole this kind of situation will face. So in hell realm, the whole situation is that sufferer is oneness with the suffering, and then there is no chance of doing any practice or no freedom at all. So these are the three lower realms which we always discuss this. And these are very, if you want to know detail about this kind of lower realm and their places, then these are very clearly mentioned in the Abhidhamma Kosha. And then one thing we have to, when I say we have to believe it, I'm not saying that we have to believe them kind of in a blind faith. We have to believe them because we cannot reject them. Right now we don't have complete knowledge. And as a Buddhist, if there is one who has the complete knowledge, that's the Buddha. And then Buddha said, I mean, these realms are there. So due to that reason, then we have to believe it. And now, if we compare our situation with the higher realms, normally we say demigods, asura, and then devas. Deva, which is in English, some translated as small g god, not big g. Yeah, we will call them as small g because they are still in the samsara. They are still subject of suffering. Not big God as a creator and who has all those powers. Basically, we Buddhists are more atheist. So in those higher realms, if we compare, then in higher realm, in asuras, their main cause is jealousy. Jealousy in the sense that they are, if you learned cosmology according to the Abhidhamma Kosha, then their places is quite near, closer to the Deva. So Deva, both in Asura and in Deva realm, since they have created kind of a defiled virtues, defiled, not undefiled, that's why they are not free from the samsara. They have a kind of defiled virtue. That's why they are still in the samsara. So they have very strong jealousy. Jealousy in the sense that when they see the all the prosperity of the Deva realm, then they cannot bear that. They also wanted that. But due to that, karma, they could not get that, and that's why they are always waging war and fighting with the devas. So normally, even in our practical life, if we see that people who has more jealousy, then they are more competitive, and then always there is kind of a struggling. So these are the kind of a cause or the process to reach there. And then in Deva, the main cause is pride, which is based on the misunderstanding of the wrong view. Because due to the defiled virtuous deeds in the past, then they have a kind of a, in a relative way, they have a very luxurious life. Kind of they enjoy all the sensual pleasures, then they think that no, that's all, you know, that's then they have kind of a satisfaction with that. But in reality, that was not. Then suddenly, when they are dying and impermanence comes, then they have a big suffering because they know that what they thought right was not right. So pride is in a way very bad, because when one's mind is mixed with the pride, then that person stops to grow, because he thinks that what he's doing is the right and he knows everything. So that is the something, you know, happens in that level, and then they just pass their life in sensual pleasures and they never bother about practicing Dharma. So in this way, compared to all these five realms, then our human life has more freedom. Freedom from all these kind of causes and this kind of sufferings. And that's why we call this human life as a precious. Because wherever there is freedom, then there is a kind of openness and there is a chance to grow. So this is a very good opportunity to grow. And when we have this freedom, more freedom from other realms, if we misuse this freedom for a wrong purpose, then that is kind of a big wastage. So we have to use this more freedom, this precious opportunity, this human life. Now I'm just speaking on a very basic level. If we still study like in Tantra, then in this same human body has all those conditions where really it becomes very precious. But since we are just studying the basic, then even in this basic level, we can say we have more freedom. And so we have to use this more freedom for the best purpose. So when Buddhists try to find the best purpose or best thing which we can get or which we can reach, that is the stage where one can make complete free from the sufferings. So that's what the Buddhists have found. So we have to use our more freedom and this preciousness opportunity to get that stage. So that is our main goal of whole practice. And even in life, you know, we have to have that as our goal. If whatever work we will do, first if we set a goal, then there is better chance to reach there. If one does not have any goal and then one just work, then we don't know where you will be. You just go to anywhere. So according to the Buddhist, the best goal we can find is the Buddhahood or the complete permanent freedom from the suffering. So that's our main purpose of doing whole practice. Now to do that practice, I mean to get to that point, we need to have, I think, very pure motivation from our side. Pure motivation in the sense that is a very wholesome mind. And with that motivation, then we need faith. If we have that goal and we wanted to go work to reach there, and if we don't have faith, and if we don't believe, then we are not going to go there. So faith is very important. When I say faith, according to the Buddhist teachings, then faith has different levels. There is that one first faith which leads, I think, all of us kind of attraction. Attraction in the sense that you heard about Buddha and maybe you hear something about some teacher, you heard about teachings, but you could not personally experience them, you know. So due to this hearing or due to something, some circumstances, you are just attracted toward that. So that is the first faith, which in Buddhist term called clear faith. So that's kind of a more to a blind faith. So I'm sure, you know, every one of us here have started from that point. Then second faith is desiring faith. When you are attracted, and due to that attraction, when you are connected, then now due to that connection, you want to gain something, you want to make some profit, or you want to make something, I mean, out of that. You wanted to become Buddha, or you wanted to free from the suffering. So these are all comes under the desiring fate, where whole practice, whether it's study or practice, is kind of more motivated by kind of desiring faith. Then third kind of faith is called believing faith, where due to the reasons, then you study and contemplate and come to a conclusion where you just believe it due to that strong reason. According to the Buddhist, I think generally in presentation of Buddhism, we always say that we are more following according to the reason than the faith. So that's the point where when we try to check and investigate all the teachings according to the reasons. So when we say reasons, generally in Buddhist logic, there are three reasons which through which we prove, and after that, then we believe. The first is, in Sanskrit, it's called pratyaksha, something direct, something personal experience. Due to that, then you can say this is valid. And then there are many things which you cannot have personal experience of direct link, but due to another reason, kind of inference, then you can prove that. That's second reason, which is called anuman. And then third, if also there are many things, you know, which we cannot prove by these two reasons, then we need a confirmation from somebody who is expert or who has the complete knowledge. So that is the Buddha, and based on Buddha's teaching and and then realized persons, I mean, experience and teachings, then we have to believe according to their reason. This is not something I don't think kind of irrational or something like that, because even in our normal life, you know, since we do not have complete knowledge, then whenever we face some kind of problem, then we seek advice and go to kind of a refuge to the experts. When we face legal problems, then we go to the lawyers. When we are sick, we go to the doctors, and we think they have more knowledge than us. They are kind of expert on that subject. So in similar way, the third reason is that Buddha has complete knowledge. So that's why whatever Buddha say, that is valid. So in these kind of three reasons, then whatever conclusion you come, then you believe it. So that's called believing faith. And once when you have this kind of believing faith, then it is starting to work on your mind. And then after that, then fourth faith is called the unshakable faith. Means whatever circumstances you will face, your faith has nothing change or effect. You will always follow it, because you have complete support and strong reasons to do that. So due to these reasons, then we believe. And then when we have the unshakable faith, then that's the point where then we have to work very hard. So here, when I say working, then it is the meeting of the Dharma. So when I say Dharma, what is Dharma? According to the Acharya Vasubandhu, Dharma is Buddha's Sat Dharma is are those the studies of his teachings and then the practice of practice based on that study. So study and practice of Buddha's teaching is Dharma according to the Buddhism. So that's what I think, you know, now we have freedom, more freedom than the other. Then I'm sure, you know, you have some level of faith. That's great. And then we have, I'm sure we have good motivation. So now why we don't, I mean, it is not always late. I mean, it's always good to start as early as possible, you know, in our life, because life itself is not going to last long. It is impermanent. So when it comes to practice, then the most important thing is, as we discussed in the beginning, that our main purpose should be to get complete freedom from the suffering. If we practice Dharma, study and practice Dharma just for a present life, kind of temporary solution for temporary suffering, then that is kind of a, in a way, that is kind of a, to kill an ant, kind of using atom bomb, you know? So, I'm not saying that Dharma is like atom bomb. What I'm saying is, the message is that, I mean, the obstacle is so small, and then when we use such a big antidote, then we are using a great energy for that, I mean, antidote, and it becomes kind of not productive. So what's Dharma? Actually, all Dharma practice is antidote to the defilements. So if you have that kind of a purpose and perfect goal, then the present life's suffering can be solved as a kind of byproduct. But, I mean, it's natural, you know, it's natural rule that, I mean, karma takes its own due course. So you cannot expect that just by doing one kind of one session of meditation now, then all the problems will be solved. What we are doing is that by doing this kind of practice, what we are trying to do is we are trying to strengthen our mind. We are trying to improve and develop our mind. So just by doing that, then that is, since karma is not, cannot lie and is not lying, due to that cause, in due course, that will have its result. If from today, by doing practice, if you can affect and you can change your mind and become your mind more wholesome and more pure, yeah, we can say, we can, I mean, as a Buddhist, we can ensure that in future you will have lesser suffering. That's the process which leads to the complete cessation of suffering. But in the same time, I mean, did many wrong things in the past life. So, I mean, those as a cause may have some, I mean, result suffering even when we do the spiritual practice. But anyhow, from right from now, you know, when we start doing this practice, then what I'm saying is, if we have that kind of perfect goal, then due to that, and whatever energy we put, we channelize towards that goal. And all temporary problems, sufferings, will be solved as a byproduct. If we use all these great studies and practice just as an antidote for kind of a present small things, then what I was saying was maybe right. Kind of using atom bomb to kill an ant. So in this way, when it comes to Dharma practice, here now I learned that you were in retreat for quite a long time, and that's very good. That is, I think, very good commitment. But in Buddhist practice, just that is not enough. We need a commitment, continuous commitment for whole life, for whole lives to come. Then only there is chance that you can change all the habitual patterns which is impressed on your mind. So while in the retreat, then I mean this is a very nice place. Whole environment is very spiritual, and there is lesser kind of obstacles. That's why, I mean, it is in a way natural that you will have better spiritual progress. And now, how strong that progress is met on the mind, in your mental continuum, then we have to test when you go away from here, when you mix with samsara. So here I will call nirvana. So we have one story, I have one story, you know, where there was one practitioner who was just doing meditation under a tree. And then somebody came and they asked, "What are you doing?" And he replied that, "I'm practicing patience." And then that who asked him hit on his head. Then that practitioner, he stood up and he also hit back, you know. So that is his practice of patience. So I hope, you know, when it is certain, you know, when we go back to the samsara, naturally we will face more obstacles, you know. So that's the point, you know, whether you can practice or you will hit back, you know. Then you will know how much, I mean, this kind of practice has helped you and strengthened your, I mean, mind. So when we say about practice and commitment, it does not mean that just by becoming Buddhist, then you have to give up everything. What we are saying is, you channelize all your, I mean, motivation towards that purpose. Then you can lead a, I mean, normal life. If you have a motivation and a faith and a pure mind, and then a ultimate goal, then whatever you will do, that will be perfect. That's according to the practice. So I think, so in this way, I think, yeah, we have to practice. And now I think I will stop here. And if anybody has questions, then I will be happy to, I will try to answer. Yeah, you may ask any kind of question. It's, I mean, we can just discuss, you know. We can just feel informal.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up?
Oh. I did not expect. No, it's okay. I'm not. Actually, I was born in Tibet. Then in 1959, I fled Tibet when Tibet was occupied by China. Then now we are refugees, and my family, like majority of the Tibetans, are resettled in South India. If any one of you have been to India, then we are in Mysore, near Mysore city. And then I studied there in Tibetan school. Then when I was 14, I became monk, and then I started my traditional Buddhist studies in Tibetan Institute, which is affiliated with Sanskrit University in Varanasi. There I studied for 10 years, basically Buddhism connected with the Sutrayana, and then Sanskrit, history, and some other subjects. Then after that, His Holiness Sakya Trizin, who is the head of the Sakyapa order of Tibetan Buddhism, has appointed me as director in charge of two of our monasteries. One is Sakya Center in Dehradun in northern India, and then one is called Sakya Institute, which is in Himachal. So in these two monasteries, we are trying to keep alive all our lineage, studies, and practices, because in our order, only few old monks have been able to come out from Tibet. So if we do not do something that will help pass their knowledge to the younger generation, then there is a danger that the whole lineage will break. So we were working very hard in these monasteries to impart these educations, and I was there until recently when His Holiness wanted to develop this center, which Sharon said, this very Sakya Chogo Yangtze, and then we have another center in Cambridge, which is called Sakya Shedubling, as his seat in America, and he blessed these centers to be developed as his seat where all the people can study and practice Dharma. So that's how I'm here, and I'm working for that. Yes, any more? No.
I was wondering how one can avoid being attached to the fruit of their karma, if the karma is, for instance, wholesome.
Of the fruit?
Of the fruit of their karma. If their karma is wholesome, how you avoid being attached to fruit of wholesome karma, that you might do something wholesome, and the mind that looks ahead thinking, I'll do this wholesome thing to achieve some goal on the way, or get some merit. Now, I see that it's important, merit is important to create a momentum, but I also see a danger in sort of becoming like a goat with a carrot to move, you know.
I did not understand very well, but I will try to answer, you know. If there is something doubt, then you have to tell me. Basically, in Buddhism, when we say about karma, I think karma is very, very kind of subtle subject. When I say wholesome, that's if basically all of the actions is coming from mind. So if you have a good motivation, then due to that good, pure motivation, whatever actions, either to your voice or to your body, whatever you do, then all those will be kind of which will bring happiness. And in a relative level, I think we have kind of the desire. In desire, there are, we have to, in a way, in some way, desire helps to get this merit, and there is something attachment. But when you progress on that level, and then there will be a stage then where without detachment, attachment, without passionless, then you can create merit and you can earn merit. And then also, if you have taken precepts as a Buddhist, either it's upasaka or whatever precepts you have taken, if you have taken a precept, then just by abstaining from doing wrong things, you have a kind of continuous, in a way, investment of virtues. So continuously you earn virtues. If it's not so clear, then you can ask me again.
No, it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, but you said that at a certain point,
mm-hmm.
the negative attachment,
mm-hmm.
excessive attachment,
mm-hmm.
to merit drops away, motivation is pure. So I'm just wondering what to do about now.
Yeah, now is the most important. People say present is always. Also in Buddhism, when we say about karma, we say what you did in the past, you can know from present through what you are experiencing sufferings. What you will be in the future, that is in your present hand. So in a way, that now of the present, that moment, then right now, as I explained to you, we have a desire to be free from the sufferings. So that, with that kind of desire, that helps us to put on the spiritual path. Then we have to work on that. And then after some level, if we go to the path, according to Buddhism, there are five paths, then when you reach around where you will see the realization, third path, then even without desire, everything will work. Yes?
There are many people practicing Buddhism in America now,
mm-hmm.
but it seems that the greatest teachers are all still coming from Asia, different
mm-hmm.
countries in Asia. And it seems that when there are really great teachers in America that are Americans, there will be much deeper faith in America. Buddhist faith. And I wonder, what do you see is the major obstacle or what do we need to look at as Americans so that we can have Americans who can become really great teachers like the teachers coming from Asia?
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand my question?
Not very clearly.
What do you see as being our biggest obstacle
mm-hmm.
for practicing
mm-hmm.
Americans? Of mind, do you think, is our biggest difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I have been here only just 3 months, you know, maybe it is too early to make any conclusion. But I was giving some, I mean, classes, and one thing I've noticed is that Americans are very intelligent. There's no question. So in Buddhist practice, generally there are two types of followers. One is completely based on the faith, more on blind faith. Just what they do is just they do prostration, kind of submission, you know, they completely give everything on the Buddha. They say whatever, I mean, so kind of, I mean, based on faith, some follow. Then there is another type for whom to come to a conclusion, then always needs reasons. So, since Americans are very intelligent, I found that for everything, they need kind of model or reasons. So, that is very good. But for that, then one has to work hard, you know, to learn, yeah, to go through the whole process. And then also, sometimes then we have to know that if we do not practice both study and then the practice, then problem is that just proving by reason and just study becomes kind of intellectual. You can know a lot about compassion, but you cannot be compassionate if you don't practice. So I think having some faith and some reason, and also balancing between study and practice, I think this is in a way the need of the present, I think, here. Then about the teachers, you know, in Buddhism, I think, yeah, that's right, Buddha came in India. But his teachings, whoever will practice, you know, that can benefit. And teaching does not have any boundary or any kind of discrimination. So main, most important thing in Buddhism is to make Dhamma within oneself, the persons. So the person, that practitioner, may from any country or from any, can be anybody. If he can practice and if he becomes great, then naturally everything follows. So I think right now in America, in some way, I think Buddhism is, compared to those Eastern countries, is quite new. So it may be due to that, I mean, everything is not working or becoming like in those countries. But I'm sure, you know, there is a great potential, and I think gradually in its due course, everything will be great and I think wonderful here. Any more? Yes?
Could you talk about the meaning and importance of compassion?
Yes. So compassion, when you start to study and practice compassion, then we are coming to the Mahayana. So the compassion means the desire to make sentient beings free from the suffering and the causes of sufferings. So if your mind, through any kind of, I mean, influence, can do that kind of, make others free from the suffering and the causes of suffering, then that is compassion.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.